Thank you very much, Soraya, for the introduction. It is a great pleasure to be sharing a table with people that I do not deserve to be sitting next to. They have given fantastic presentations, a continuation of all the wonderful work that they have been doing over many years. I am going to talk, and I'm going to talk about different things, some of which I was planning to do and some of which I was not. I've taken out many, many slides, but it is impossible when I hear the discussions that precede not to have a reaction to them. So I hope you will allow me or you will forgive me for entering and exiting many different spaces in a matter of 15, 20 minutes, I guess. Okay. So, in order not to be completely out of order, I decided to put as a first slide the gender paths of transmission of this crisis. Paid work is affecting everybody, is affecting men and women. There are first round effects, second round effects that everybody talks about it. If you were working in the financial sector, clearly you got fired, you were the first one to be affected. But then as you don't have that income, a number of other people are going to be fired because you will not be demanding their services and their goods and so on and so forth. The story goes. But when it comes to gender disaggregation in locations of employment, not all countries, not all women suffer in quite identical ways. So if you are in a developing country, but there is no textile export sector in that country, clearly that is not going to affect you, as demand coming now from the United States and other developed countries is being reduced. So the impact of lower demand for imports from the developed world would not affect you. But if you are located in those industries, in those countries, of course you will be affected. Agriculture and tourism. What do we know about agriculture and tourism? We know that in sub-Saharan Africa, over 65% of agricultural production is in the hands of women. In other parts of the world, 47, 48, but subsistence production, not cash crops, but subsistence production is basically where women find themselves. They do find themselves in some high-end sectors in agriculture, high value added, like cut flour and what have you, and clearly they will be affected. We will see the numbers coming in the next few months. Tourism, where are women located? In the lowest pay scale jobs. So it is not only that, it is not so much the last hired, first fired effect that we will see, but what we will see is that for those segments of employment that were accessible to women, these are going to be disappearing. Informal work and vulnerable workers, I run the risk of repeating what Sergi Maria Floro talked to us a lot about, and I know the majority of people that are here are familiar with her work. I just want to mention one thing. We should not universalize, because when it comes to the informal sector, although women are generally vulnerable because they are part of the informal sector, there are cases where we have to be very careful as to what the reaction is. If you expected, for example, in the 2001 Asian crisis, for all women in the informal sector to be equally affected, you were making a grand mistake as a policymaker. Because one of the things that happened was with the decline of demand for restaurants, for example, in downtown areas where offices were located, with the elimination of these middle-class restaurants, street food vendors were in high demand, and they expanded their business, but they did not have access to informal credit. So what should the response have been? Be aware, extend, have some lending facilities that women could have access to it. Because this did not happen, what happened? Restaurateurs that were closing down entered that segment, and what happened was that you had actually street vending by men who owned previously restaurants entering and having access to credit. So there was an imbalance in the access to credit that was not there before. So you can start seeing structures that were not there before. You can start seeing gendered responses to the crisis that actually intensify inequalities that were not existing earlier. Unpaid work and how that is impacted upon, well, in the morning, we heard our many speakers speak about that, so I'm not going to reiterate it, except to say that Ms. Garcia gave us a very good review on this. And food security and women, well, I cannot follow, of course, what Jayati's wonderful presentation. Finally, the last item that one will see a lot in the literature that we know from the past during periods of crisis, and now will be coming up also, is remittances. And given the kinds of work that women do when they become migrant workers, we will see how all that pans out and who gets affected more, who gets affected less. We know that, for example, Mexican workers in the United States, it has been primarily men that have been affected, but there are second and third order effects when all the care workers are going to be fired because you cannot support this anymore, and you will have women in the households that before were not performing the work. Actually, many people in Latin America, many women in Latin America, are able to enter the labor markets precisely because somebody else is doing that kind of work. So we will see some changes in these kinds of trends, I believe, in the next couple of months. Okay, what am I doing here? Okay, let's see. All right. Now, patently, I'm switching a little bit the discussion. What I like to stress in these kinds of meetings is that, yes, we have a financial crisis. Yes, countries are being affected for no fault of their own, developing countries especially, because mostly they have been following the instructions that were given by the IFI, by the International Financial Institutions. And actually, when we look at external balances and when we look at both internal and external balances and reserves that they were accumulating, well, they were doing whatever gave the signal that their economy is stable to attract investment, and we all know how the story goes. But the point is that while they were doing that, there were a number of crises that were in place already. And those crises, visible or invisible as they may be, they never command the respect and the attention of the international community and of the budgetary allocations that come with it in order to be really, really addressing them. To allocate pittance to meet one goal or another goal with countries not even meeting their own commitments has been the story, actually. And when it comes to poverty, when it comes to lack of work, joblessness, a crisis in jobs, and when it comes to income inequality, in Latin America, for example, colleagues and statistics tell the story very clearly. When it comes to diminishing space for livelihoods and the usurpation of land, a kind of primitive accumulation that is taking all over the place, and I know Amit has talked a lot about it and is involved in this kind of work. These are crises. These are real crises in people's lives. So the crisis that we are all talking about here, especially as it affects the lives and livelihoods of women, come to sit on top of crises that have existed for a very long time. Oops.
Just to escape.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay. So, as we say that the markets right now are facing a number of challenges, and as Jayati said earlier and others have repeated in the past, that every crisis provides both an opportunity that can be grabbed or it can turn out to be a total disaster because everything deteriorates. What is everything deteriorates from our perspective? More inequality. When it comes to gender, when it comes to poverty, when it comes to income, when it comes to wealth. Less attention to delivery of social services, et cetera, et cetera. We know what this is all about, really. The challenges that have been identified so far have to do with international market dynamics that lead to food prices, as Jayati talked to us about, and also what is going on with financial markets. I want to spend the remaining, not 5 minutes, because I have three extra minutes, as I was not announced in a long letter. That was the purpose. That was the only purpose that I said, please do not announce. I have three extra minutes, so I have 8 minutes. Okay, so what I would like to spend the rest of the time with you today is to talk about the challenge that is with us before, during, and after crisis. And that challenge has to do with joblessness, with people not having jobs, not having work, not being able to survive, therefore, by using the one thing that they have in a capitalist system. If you don't have assets, the one thing that you have in order to survive is your own labor. So you have idle labor. You have enforced idleness on people, whether they are working part-time or whether you are in a situation like in South Africa, a country I will talk about to you now, where you get unemployment of something like 25, 35, 45, 55%, and in some types of households, you get unemployment of 85%. You get people that have lived in households where nobody has held a job for over 15 years. That is a crisis. That is not a crisis that is coming to us because of the financial crisis. It is one that will get exacerbated. But how can we capture this very moment to draw attention to what needs to be changed as everybody's rethinking about challenges and failures and so on and so forth to address some of the concerns that we have because they have been with us all along? So if you look at the last bullet point to address unemployment, I want to talk to you again about the idea of the state becoming responsible, governments assuming the responsibility to provide jobs when the markets fail. How can this be done? Can it be done? It is really a separate discussion, what kinds of institutions and what kinds of financial resources you must have. But I want to comment on, I want to give you a new sentence. I don't know if it's going to stick in our minds, but Niloufer Chatai and Diane Elson have spoken very, very eloquently in the past about the social content of economic policies. And I would like us to start also thinking about the economic content of social policies. If you are in a period of structural adjustment, as you were in Latin America, and all of a sudden there is a program that is being introduced, a social safety net that provides jobs, provides cash transfers. I have no doubt whatsoever, as Jomo told us this morning, that there will be a poverty reduction. Yes, because you're providing some cash or you're providing a temporary job. Of course there will be an impact on poverty. It will be, though, a band-aid. And I think that we have to stop accepting the social interventions and social protection measures that are band-aids. I think we have to make a claim right now that says we want policy consistency and policy coherence. Because if on the one hand you have the IMF lending with all kinds of conditionalities that we have been discussing, and at the same time I get the best of possible scenario, the various regional banks or the World Bank saying, okay, you can go ahead and have some sort of employment guarantee scheme, this is going to be another failure. Why? Because the consistency is not there. It is not because the programs cannot work. It is not that there is something wrong with social protection programs of cash transfers. No, they are wonderful. They work beautifully for children. But they cannot become substitutes for social justice. And social justice for us really means that you allow people to be included in production and in processes that guarantee that there is enough food on their plate. So when we have food insecurity right now, we have to say that if the international community responds with the usual food aid and the usual transferring of wheat and I don't know what else on ships that are owned by the United States, we say no to that. We really have a massive campaign that we say it is not just about responses to save the poor. And I am quoting Niloufer again. The poor. Who are the poor and who said that this is the response that the poor want? What the poor want is that they are allowed to receive from their own governments subsidies to fertilizers. so they can use it the way they want to use it, and they can produce and increase their own food security. So what we have to do when it comes to employment, and I will end because I have only three minutes. I will not go through clearly all of the 15 slides which will be available for you to review. What should we do with employment? I think we have to stick to the right to a job, the right to work as an entitlement, which means that you can mobilize labor permanently, and through that there can be coordination policy that will allow us to very smoothly get to what Amit last night was talking about in a smaller circle, demand-led growth and wage-led growth. It is possible, it is another path, but it can be done. If you combine wisely the idea of the government being responsible to mobilize unused labor that will allow people to earn a living, that will have an impact on wages, that will have an impact on demand. If you do it right, you will have backward and forward linkages within your own economy, and you can center and restructure according to a different principle. You can have a structural adjustment policy, actually, in countries, but that structural adjustment will be different. It will be to use and mobilize your own resources in order to be able to achieve the maximum possible inclusion in employment and standard of living of people, not relying exclusively on exports. When some countries cannot do that because of the resources, discussions, not only with Amit, but with some other friends of ours in Brazil that have started a campaign for an employment of last resort program in Brazil, what they propose is regional arrangements. Regional arrangements does not mean you have banks. Regional arrangements means that you have cooperation and policies that would allow what is produced and by using domestic labor and domestic resources in one place to be absorbed in another region that is near you, that has entered these bilateral agreements. So I will stop here, and I hope that you will at least show how upset you are that I did not talk more about the gender paths of transmission, in which case I will be obligated to respond to your questions. Thank you very much.